Hello, and welcome to the Providence College Podcast. I'm your host, Liz Kay, and I'm joined by producer Chris Judge of the Class of 2005. Here at the Providence College Podcast, we bring you interesting stories from the Fryer family. This week, we're speaking with Jason Macaluso, Vice President of Wealth Management and founding partner of Boone Macaluso Partners at UBS Financial Services in New Haven, Connecticut. Macaluso, who graduated from PC in 1996 with a degree in finance, joins us to discuss the power of marketing, regardless of your career or industry. Jason, it's nice to have you back on the pod.
Thanks for having me, Liz. It's been, a couple years since I've been on this, I think?
It's been a little while. So we don't really need to rehash all the bad news we've been hearing. On top of the global pandemic and the economy is tanking, the class of 2020 is facing a terrible job market, and many people around the country are losing jobs as well. So how could marketing help them?
Yeah, we chatted a little bit about this last week, and I think right now, as with any negative situation, you could definitely find some positives out of it. So one of the things I've found personally is that you have a very captive audience, right? So right now, the entire world, or at least the United States and most of the world, is working from home. So to track people down, you know where they are. So they're going to be at home. They're going to be in front of a computer most of their day. They're going to be accessible. So there's no, again, it's a bad situation to go out and meet people, but I think it's a good situation to actually find people that are willing to have a conversation with you.
I think marketing and sales, unfortunately, has a really bad reputation. It's probably like high up on the list of most unpopular professions out there. Why do you think it has that bad rap?
Well, I think sales in general has that bad rap of, the sleazy salesman, the sleazy salesperson. I'm not going to pick on industries, but generally you're selling a product, right? You're selling so I'll pick on used cars, or you're selling copy machines, but you're selling a product. And again, a bad rap of just slimy sales practices. But on the flip side, I think every industry, every job, regardless of what you go into, is you're selling something, and primarily you're selling yourself. So take an example of me being in finance. So I work in a very commoditized business, right? Like what I offer, what my group offers through our firm at UBS is the same exact thing that any other person in finance could offer. So I'm not selling something to somebody that they can't get through somebody else. What I am selling them is myself. So as I sit down with PC students or talk to them on the phone or do presentations like this, at the end of the day, you have to sell yourself, because people want to do business with people that they like, especially now with the job market. So all the kids that are graduating, was it this week or they've graduated already, they're going to look the same on paper. They have a four-year degree from a great college, and they're very smart, and they've done this, they've done Habitat for Humanity, and they've done sports, they've done all this extracurricular activities. So at the end of the day, when it's time for them to reach out to people and look for that job, they're all going to look the same on paper. So they're not selling the product. They have to go in there and sell themselves. They have to sell their personality. They have to sell their ambition. And that's something that you can't put on paper. It's something that you have to do when you present to people.
I'm curious how you learned to embrace the selling mindset, what in your career history and your on your resume, what helped you get to that point?
Yeah, so I graduated from PC in 96, like you said, with a degree in finance, and I really didn't know what I wanted to do right away. I say this and it's going to sound awful, but there were so many job opportunities back then. I mean, I said no to so many jobs more than I said yes to, which is crazy now in hindsight. But I learned really quick that, I wanted to get into a position where I was able to get in front of people, and I liked the sales side of, meeting with somebody. For me, it was the thrill of sitting down with somebody that I've never met before and trying to get them to get in front of me and say yes. So fast forward a couple of years when I got into this position, wealth management. At the time, it was called stockbroker. So we were literally pitching products. I would make 300 plus cold calls every single day, 5 days a week, Monday through Friday, come back on Saturday and call all morning, and we were literally selling a product. So we were selling, at the time it was a bond or a stock or something specific. It was very product driven. But I learned really quick when I sat down with somebody that actually wanted to talk to me about this product, that it was never about the product. So every relationship that I started with these clients, and some of them are still clients to this day, 20 plus years later, it was a product conversation that turned into a relationship conversation. But the product was just the quick catch over the phone to get them to at least have a conversation with me. And I knew once I got in front of them, it was not about the product. It was selling myself and my services.
So what are some of the things that you learned in that experience? I mean, cold calling person after person, I feel like I'm reminded of that scene with Will Smith out of Pursuit of Happiness. I don't know if you've seen it.
I love that movie. So you know, it's funny. That movie's great. It's such a great, it exemplifies what cold calling is all about and what sales is all about. Because if, you know, that movie, the movie Boiler Room, Wall Street, Glengarry Glen Ross, they're all sales movies and they're all pitching different things. But what I learned is, so we would go in every single morning, 7 a.m., and we'd have index cards. This is right before the internet, right when the internet was taken off. And from 7 a.m. to 5 p.m., you had a certain amount of time that you could make a certain amount of calls. And the time frame was you could make 300 dials, which includes a little bit of time for lunch and everything else you had to do. So you make 300 dials, and you know in those 300 dials that there's one person that's going to say yes to you. So it was a game. You had 299 people that were going to say no, and you had to find that one person that was going to say yes. So it could have been the first person. It could have been the last person. So you basically had to get a thick skin really quick and know that in the stack of cards that you had, there was one person that was going to say yes to you. So it was just picking them off one by one and figuring out which one was going to say yes to you. And Will Smith does the same thing. You know, the whole thing in that movie was you start at the bottom of the list every day, and they're the quote unquote crappy leads. And then the CEO is always at the top, right? So he had to get through the first couple hundred names at the bottom before you get to the top. And then that one day he skipped all the names and went to the top and got the CEO on the phone and got the guy to talk to him, blah, blah, blah. But it's a game. It's luck. It's dumb luck. It's blind luck, but it's having a thick skin. And that's literally how I built my entire career. But I did get smart after a while, because banging your head against the desk 300 times, regardless of who you are, is not fun. So I ended up going towards a relationship route by cold calling the PC alumni directory. And that's really where I figured out right away, where it stuck in my head, that if I cold called PC alumni, and they were literally cold calls. I graduated in 96, so I'd go back 15 years because nobody in my class had any money. And I'd go to the, you know, mid 80s, and I would literally just cold call PC alumni directory and just say, hey, you know, I'm a new grad, fellow friar. I would just like an opportunity to sit down and talk to you. And if they didn't hang up on me, they'd at least have a conversation with me and make me feel better. But a lot of them would end up having a conversation with me. And so I stopped making 300 dials and would make, you know, 25 PC dials and, you know, 200 non-PC dials. But the PC dials became more lucrative. And over the years, that's how my entire practice was built, through PC alum.
So the Fryer family coming through. And
yeah, I've said this, you know, I'll say it to anybody. I know any guest in your podcast will say the same thing. Besides the 4 years when you're at school, the best part of the PC education and the Fryer family is the alumni network. We have one of the strongest alumni bases in the United States, if not the world. A great example, my business partner, Andy, went to Penn. So Ivy League school, a lot of smart people. We have very few Penn clients because their alumni network is not very strong. As far as wanting to work with other Penn clients. And a lot of it has to do with they're all in finance as well, but it's just a different mentality. Where the Fryer family, it's anybody's willing to work with you or at least sit down and have a conversation with you. And to this day, you know, a lot of my clients have become through relationships that I built through the Fryer family. And, you know, so I got smart right away that was the way to get in front of people. You know, at the time I was 22 years old, 24 years old. I looked like I was 16. So I needed to get in front of people that would at least have a conversation. And it was through the Fryer family that I was able to do it.
But, and it seems like at least having a few of those friendly calls, some proportion of friendly calls every day would give you the confidence to keep making those other extremely cold calls.
Yes, because, you know, there's going to be so many no's, right? It's like a movie. It's, you know, years are compressed into 2 hours. If I think back, you know, sitting at a desk making dial after dial, it's awful. There's nothing good. There's nothing fun about it. There's nothing good about it. There's nothing positive about it. But if you get a few wins, you know, you get a few people to actually have a 2-minute conversation with you and telling you to go piss off or what other word they're going to use, then it's actually enjoyable to have a conversation. And again, we said at the beginning, I'm not selling a product, you're selling yourself. So if you could start a conversation with someone over a commonality, you know, the conversation was never me pitching them a product. It was about, you know, your PC experience. You know, what did you do in 84? What was Civ like back then? You know, did you have Professor X as, you know, for finance? And those conversations morphed into 10-minute calls, 20-minute calls, morphed into, then you turn on your sales charm and you're like, look, you know, let's have a conversation about what I do and how I help other PC alum. And it just opens up more doors. And a lot of those calls, they didn't, you know, I would lie if I said they all turned into clients, but, you know, they turned into relationships where they introduced me to other people that might not have been PC alumni, but they at least opened doors for me that got me to literally where I am today.
What I find fascinating about this advice is that I can see how it would have parallel applications to people. You know, the most important client is the person who's going to hire you in a job interview, right? So even if you're not in sales, if you're not selling a financial product, if you're not, you know, selling something else, you're selling yourself at that job interview.
Yeah. So I think it goes right now with that. So let's bring this back to the current students and the job market and how awful it is. You know, they have to walk in there and start a conversation with, they have to do a Zoom call and start a conversation with someone, right? They can't even walk in there. They can't shake their hand. They can't look them square in the eye. They have to do it over video, over audio. So it's going to be awkward. If there's that, you just need one little commonality to start a conversation. And I always say this with anybody, you know, if you could turn the conversation around to have them talking about themselves, people love to talk about themselves. You know, I'm an introvert, but I could talk about myself all day. But the biggest thing in sales I've learned is to have the other person talk about themselves. So if you're a PC student or you're graduating or, you know, first year out of school, and you're looking to get that job interview, and then once you're going to get, you know, at least the conversation, figure out a catch to have the person on the other line or in front of you, you know, talk about themselves, talk about an experience that you have a commonality with, get an icebreaker going. You know, nobody likes to talk and have a very formal conversation, especially over Zoom calls or audio or video. But if you could have a conversation going, you know, we did this at the beginning of this podcast. We talked for 10 minutes before we got going, and it was about training and racing and family and everything else. And all of a sudden, you feel like you know the person. So yeah, you're walking into that, and I gotta keep saying walking in, but you're starting that conversation. You need that commonality. You need to sell yourself. And by selling yourself, it's, you know, pick something that you have in common, and hopefully it's that Fryer connection.
And finding those commonalities will probably help with every person you work with in your office, virtual or otherwise, right? You know, and the ability to make that small talk and build a connection.
Yeah. You know, at the end of the day, people want to work and do business with people they enjoy being around. There's so many smart people, so many people that could do any type of job that we're in. But if you're going to build a group of people, you want to do it with people that you like and you share interests in, so you could talk about stuff other than work. And I think if nothing else we've learned in this whole pandemic working from home, it's that, you know, there's more to life than just than work. It's figuring out ways to integrate everything, which is family, which is, you know, health. You know, it used to be doing these calls if you're dog started barking, or, you know, your daughter walked in and you'd freak out. But now it's like, it's the new normal. So I think if you could break that ice and realize that the person in front of you is human, it's going through the same issues that you're going through. You know, I know it's tough. You know, a 22-year-old, it's daunting to sit in front of a 50-something-year-old CEO of a major corporation or head of HR But you know what? At the end of the day, they're going through the same issues as you, and there's nothing wrong with turning it around and asking them how it's going for them. You know, I've in the past couple of weeks, and PC students have reached out to me for job advice. It's, you know, I said, when you talk to people, ask them what they're feeling right now. You know, talk to people in industry and ask them what they're seeing. Get their opinion. You know, don't ask. I always tell people this: don't ask for a job, ask for advice. People love to give advice. You know, if somebody called me and said, I want your advice, I'll give you my advice all day. But so find a way for them to turn it around and, you know, make the conversation about the other person, and then it'll all come back to you.
Now, you said something that surprised me a little bit, because previously you had said you'd been energized by the conversations, by getting to know someone. But then you described yourself as an introvert, and that I was going to ask you for advice. You know, if meeting new people does not energize you, what advice do you have for those folks? What do you tell introverts? Yeah. And now I know you're a fellow introvert.
So I have I think I'm a pretty cool personality, but I'm just a big introvert. Like, this whole working at home, staying at home thing is perfect for me, because I was just kind of, you know, get in my own little office and then just kind of be myself, you know, family aside. But so I'm not one to walk into a room of a couple hundred people and strike up a conversation with anybody. But I could stand in front of a room of 500 people and give a presentation. I could answer questions in front of a room of 500 people, because it's talking about myself. It's having confidence in myself. So I've learned long ago what my strengths are. My strengths are, you know, cold calling is easy, because I could just go through them. If they don't want to talk to me, I just hang up. Like, no big deal. No skin off my back. I don't want to talk to you either. But if someone actually wants to talk to me, I could talk to you all day. I started doing seminars really early on in my career, because I found that I could talk in front of a room. But I didn't go to networking events, because as an introvert, that doesn't appeal to me. So I would go to the proverbial networking event, and I would get nothing out of it. I wouldn't talk to anybody. I would sit in the corner, go with the one person I knew, like the wallflower at the dance, you know. But so going back, to answer your question directly, it's figuring out what your strengths are, and then hitting it that way. So for me, it's talking in front of a room. So I just need to get people in front. I just need to get an audience, then I could talk all day. So I did a big part of my career doing seminars. So I'd get the people in front of the room. And then once I had a captive audience, I know they were there to listen to me, and I could talk all day.
And you were comfortable with that, and it wasn't.
Yeah. So for me, that's my comfort level, right? I think it goes back to what's your comfort level. I've done, you know, a couple of years ago, me and my business partner were doing some podcasts of our own for our business, where we were interviewing interesting people, and we had some really cool conversations, because I didn't have the time. I can make people talk all day. Like, me sitting here is kind of weird for me, but I enjoy talking. But I'm really good at sitting down with someone and letting them talk and feeding them, just as you're doing with me, Liz. You know, that's what makes a good host, is letting the other person talk. So I've learned, if I can get other people talking, they give me more information than I need or whatever think about asking them, right? So if I get them to just spill their guts, that's how they become a client of mine. Because just as you catch on to little things that I'd say, I catch on to little things that they say, and then turn it around, make it all about them. So again, going back to your original question, is everybody has their strengths. Cold calling was not a strength. It was more of a, I had no other choice. But for me, it was just getting in front of people. And then once I was in front of people, it was allowing them to open up and then just spill their guts to me, and then try to build that relationship with them.
Are there things that people could do, that students, you know, graduating seniors or even underclassmen who are getting prepped for internships and other things, they could do to kind of practice some of these skills, the ability to strike up a conversation and do that? What would you recommend?
Yeah, so this is something I learned by making 300 cold calls. And this was, the training class was pretty weak, but it was basically, the one thing that they told us was, the reason for making these calls is not to open business. It's to build up the confidence to talk to complete strangers and learn how to talk to people of all different, you know, all different personalities. So if you make 300 cold calls a day, you're going to talk to 300 different personalities. So it taught you really quick how to talk to people and how to have an intelligent conversation with someone. So one of the things I tell students when I do these types of events is go on LinkedIn, go, you know, first connect with me, go through my entire network of 5,000 people, and, you know, or just go and just find all the PC alumni and connect with every single PC alumni you can on LinkedIn. Then send each of them a note thanking them for connecting with you and ask them for a 20-minute conversation where they could give you advice on what they're, you know, what they would do right now. And then have a phone call with them. Don't even do a Zoom call. Just have a regular plain old pick up the phone and have a phone call with them. Because something I've learned is, you know, I talk to a lot of students and it's tough. I get it. They're in their 20s and, you know, I'm 45. So I've been doing this a long time. As I could tell right away who's really good on the phone and those that don't want to be there. And I tell them that flat out, you know, if they're really good on the phone, I'll tell them that. So one of your strengths is you're really good on the phone. So you should do something that allows you to converse more with people. And the only way you get better at conversation is by having more of them. And it's not with your friends, it's not with your family, it's with complete strangers. And by doing it with PC alum, you know, they're going to have a fun conversation with you. So you could get a little relaxed, you know, swear a little bit, but it's just getting them away from talking with friends and having that conversation. So I think it's definitely, you know, reaching out to alum or anybody in that regard and just having conversations. The only thing you get good at is practicing. You know, that's why we had to make 300 cold calls every single day, because they sucked, but you had to do them every single day. And every day it got a little easier because you're getting a little better and having better conversations.
So I'm curious how this whole pandemic experience has impacted your work with your clients. I mean, you know, you didn't usually stay in your house this many hours a day.
Yeah, no, it was crazy. So, you know, I work in New Haven in an office. I'm in there pre-pandemic. I was in there a lot, but I was, you know, as my career has built, I have more flexibility when I go in. But mostly my day consists of, you know, talking to clients. So we talk to every single one of our clients 4 times a year, regularly scheduled calls. A lot of more were face-to-face meetings. So that got kind of difficult. So fast forward to the pandemic, working from home. The problem with what happened with us is, besides working from home, the market decided to go down about 1,000 or 2,000 points every single day for the first 3 or 4 weeks of this pandemic. So I learned really quick how to work at home with my wife, who's also working full time, thankfully from home, my daughter, who's home or remote learning through school, and me trying to run a business with clients. So basically what I would do is every single morning I'd get up, figure out what the market was going to do, and then reach out to every single one of my clients and just have a conversation with them. So it was literally just making emails and phone calls and Zoom calls or Skype calls and just talking to people, because the biggest thing we were doing was not making any decisions. We had done all the work before this happened, knowing that something like this could happen that might have an impact on their financial lives. So it was literally just hand-holding. It was literally just going in and having conversations with clients, really ask them what's going on in their life. You know, all my clients are, you know, I have a lot of business owner clients. So every single business owner client was impacted. I have some retired clients who life became a little crazy for them because, you know, they might have been, you know, compromised. So now they can't go out anymore. They can't see their grandkids anymore. I have clients that have to go into work, whether they're doctors or nurses. So it's talking to them. Unfortunately, I had a couple of clients that were laid off. So it's having conversations with them. So it was literally bringing the conversation back to the personal side. And that's why they do business with me. You know, like I said at the beginning, I work in a very commoditized business. I do nothing different than another person that works at UBS or Merrill Lynch. So, but my clients trust me and they have a relationship with me. And it was just having that conversation. You know, they were asking how I was doing, how my wife was doing, how my daughter was doing. They know about my family, my parents, you know, so it was just having normal, friendly conversations. And oh, by the way, everything's going to be okay. We talked about something like this could happen to derail your, you know, your investment goals, but we're not going to do anything today. You know, this will play out as it always does. And it was, you know, getting them involved in, you know, everything that the firm has to offer, putting them on conference calls with strategists and basically telling them to shut off the TV, shut off the news, stop living, you know, the second to second information that was being thrown at them, and just take a step back and having those types of friendly conversations with them. And it was funny, I did that. And the first couple of weeks were awful. You know, even though you have those conversations, nobody likes to see their account down 30%. I don't, you know, it makes me sick knowing that these are clients I've had for 20 years and, you know, they've lost 20% of their wealth in 2 weeks. But I've been here in 99, I've been here in 2008. And I know, you know, we've been through this before. And it was just kind of just having that easy conversation with them. And then here we are, fast forward a couple months later, and accounts are back, markets are normalized again. You know, we're not back to where we were. This is not normal, but it's a little better than it was. But then during this whole thing, I also had a conversation with my doctor. So, you know, through a Skype call or through a Zoom call, and I'm like, how is this going to go down? And he just had the same conversation with me. You know, it was literally, how you doing? How you feeling? How's your family? Are you still running? Are you still training? Blah, blah. You know, it got a little personal, but it was a feel good conversation that he was doing. So I think any profession right now, people just want to have conversations and just, you know, be really genuine and sincere with how people are doing right now. Because everybody's going through this in some capacity, whether you're, you know, a freshman, a graduating senior, or the CEO of a Fortune 500 company.
This is the unfortunate unifier, right? We all have some level of anxiety and grief that we're all working through.
Yeah, and I don't, it actually makes it, this is going to sound awful, but it makes it easier. You know, when I went through this in 2008, when the financial markets were crashing, it was very compartmentalized into my industry and my clients. So I had clients that were losing significant wealth, but their job was fine because their job was unimpacted or their health was unimpacted. So it was very compartmentalized. My, you know, at the time, firms that I was working for were going out of business. It was just crazy. Now, to your point, Liz, is everybody's going through the same thing. You know, it's there's a unifying thing that everybody can relate to this. So as I was sending out these calls to clients and wanting to talk to them about their portfolios, they didn't even care. Like, it wasn't top on their mind. What was top on their mind was their health, their family's health, their safety, my well-being. So it was just, you know, going back to students now, it's have real conversations with people. People don't know what, nobody knows what's going to happen tomorrow. You know, nobody knows what's going to happen next week. Nobody knows what's going to happen to the job market. So have real conversations with people about what's happening now. And then people remember that versus the craziness.
It's funny how we suddenly are acknowledging each other's humanity in a way that weren't doing that before.
Right.
It's a different way to start our conversations. Everybody, I hope your family is safe and well.
Yes.
So this might seem a little lighter, and we've referenced it a little bit already, but so you were a triathlete and you were making the transition to ultramarathons. How has everything changed now?
So it's been crazy. So for 15 years, because it's been a year before my daughter was born, I got really into endurance sports, specifically triathlon training. I've done multiple half Ironmans, multiple age group national championships, and Olympic distance. And I did it for a lot of reasons. I was swimming background. It was something I've always enjoyed. And I did it actually going back to networking. I met so many people that shaped my career through the triathlon community. Because again, people want to do business with people they like and enjoy. And, you know, just so many people I meet on swims or bikes or runs that ended up being, you know, great business partners or clients of mine. And then, so fast forward to 2020, is I wanted to take a little step. I turned 45 last year and I wanted to get into ultra marathons. So I signed up for my first 50K trail race, which is supposed to be April 15th or April 14th, right around there. Trained all winter for it. And then, like everything else, they had to cancel it. So it was, you know, pretty heart-wrenching because I trained all winter for and trained more than I've ever thought I could, you know, imagine. Wasn't swimming or biking, was just running every single day, running 40, 50, 60 miles a week. And then, you know, it was canceled. But again, I had my pity party for 48 hours. And then some other goals of mine for this year. There's no race in the calendar right now. So I decided that I now have an very first question we talked about is I have an opportunity. Instead of having to wake up at 4:30 every morning to get my training in, I actually sleep in until 6 o'clock and get an hour or an hour and a half run in, and then actually start my day at the same time I would when I have to get up at 4:30, because I don't have to commute anymore. My wife and daughter are home, so it's a little easier for us to all be here together. So I'm actually just going out every day and just running. I did a run this morning that was 8 miles, and I ran just a way I've never gone before, because I said, I'm just going to go out there and figure out how long it is. It ended up being 8 miles, and I ran to, it's a lake by us, and we were talking about before, and I actually ran a different route there and just actually stopped during my run and actually watched the sunrise and watched, like, you know, just took advantage of being outside. And so I think it's kind of cool to not have something in the calendar, because right now I'm actually enjoying just getting out there and just running and just enjoying. And my 13-year-old daughter, who is a competitive swimmer, we just bought her a wetsuit, so we're gonna start doing some open water swims together. And she's biking a lot more than me, so I had to get my butt back on the bike and start riding with her again. So this is totally different for me. Usually I'm laser focused on, you know, 3 or 4 different races a year. A year ago this time, it would be 2 weeks out to my first half Ironman, which is in Connecticut, but that was canceled. So, you know, at this point of the year, it's like, I don't have anything on the calendar. There's no September races going on. You know, we're talking before, Chris may or may not do New York. So it's like, I don't want to put anything in the calendar. I just want to enjoy kind of what's going on and just get out there and just run and enjoy training for a little while.
So it's been a break, you know, 15 years, right?
Which is ironically one of the reasons why I stopped doing triathlons, because it was too regimented. It was, if you're training for these long events, you know, swimming, biking, and running, you have to figure out how to get in 2 workouts a day. You know, how to get up at 4:30 and bike for an hour and a half, and then how to swim at night, how to do a 2-hour run on the weekend, how to do a 5-hour ride on the weekend. And it just became a job. And I got burnt out, and which is why I went into ultra running, because it's definitely daunting running, you know, 50K or 50 miles. But the schedule is a little, I don't say it's easier, to relax. It's just get out there and run every day. Just go run. There's just run slow, run forever, don't get hurt, which is the part I enjoyed. And then I got the trail running, which I've never thought I would do, which is just awesome. And it probably couldn't have come at a better time, because now I'm just able to actually enjoy it again and get recharged. And I'll definitely get back into tries, especially with my daughter getting into them now. But for now, I'm just kind of enjoying just being, as Des Linden said, who won Boston 2 years ago, they're asking her what she's training for. And she's like, I'm just training for life. You know, why not?
Just freedom and the thrill and the exhilaration of being out there.
Yeah, just enjoy it. Enjoy for what got you into it in the first place.
Well, Jason, it's been fantastic talking with you. Thank you so much for coming on the pod again.
Yeah, I love, like, as an introvert, I love doing this stuff because it opens me up. And, you know, like I said at the beginning or somewhere in between, I tell us everybody to talk to, you know, find me on LinkedIn. I'm easy to find, connect with me, and then just have a conversation with me. Have a conversation with as many alumni as you can, because the Fryer family is there to help, just as you're doing with these podcasts, Liz. It's amazing how many Fryers are out there doing cool and amazing stuff that nobody knows about. You know, it's like they're hidden, but they're all in our world. So just, I enjoy doing this kind of stuff. So thanks again for having me.
Thank you, Jason. Subscribe to the Providence College Podcast in all the usual places, including Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. If you like what you hear, please review and share with others. Thanks for listening, and go Fryers.